Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
Thank you. Some of my students are here. Hello, welcome to the second talk of this semester in the Communication Research Colloquium series. My name is James Cummings. I serve as co-director for the Communication Research Center, one of the organizing bodies that puts on the series. Today we have with us Dr. Donald Cook. I'm going to do a little bit of reading to make sure I get all the details correct for my students. Don't take this as a sign of what we learned as being not pursuing sincerity. Very sincere in all of my thoughts. Dr. Wright is the Harold Burson Professor and Chair of Public Relations here in the College of Communication, and he joins us with a wealth of academic and professional experience at New York. He is one of the most published public relations scholars in the areas of ethics, employee communication, and social media, and is an internationally known professor, author, speaker, researcher, advisor, and corporate communications consultant. In addition to teaching, conducting scholarly and applied research, and lecturing in more than 30 countries on 5 continents. That's the numbers. Professor Wright has worked full-time in corporate, agency, and university public relations. Today, he'll be sharing with us some of his insights related to social media research, measurement, and evaluation in the PR industry. If you would, please join me in warmly welcoming Dr. Donald Cook.
Thanks very much, Jim. I'm going to stand a bit and sit a bit. I've got this athletic injury that when it starts hurting, it's a muscle in my hip, and when it starts hurting, if I sit, it goes away. So I'm not trying to be rude. The other thing I want to tell you before we started was I want to thank you for being here. I'm teaching in the period just before this, a short distance down the hall. So I was like one of the first people in the room, and I, invariably when that happens and you show up in the first person in the room, you plug in your laptop and the slides come up and everything works perfectly. It's those days when you get here with only 2 minutes to spare that all hell breaks loose and you don't have the things. But I was the only person in the room, and then next along came a young lady who said that she was not a Boston University student, but she'd like to sit in on this, and so I welcomed her. I was thinking, it's good, because we need somebody else here besides me, and so forth and so on. And I'm remembered of the time years ago when I was speaking in the afternoon, late in the afternoon at a conference, and I got ready to start, and there was only one other person in the audience. And I turned to that person, and I said, you know, you really don't have to stay and listen to my remarks. He said, oh, yes, I do, because I'm the next speaker. So fortunately, the room started to fill up, and I thank you for being here. The other thing I want to a couple things I want to talk about just briefly is that I have the honor of being the Harold Burson professor at Boston University, and Harold Burson was selected by PR Week, which is sort of the New York Times of the public relations trade press. And Mr. Burson was clearly the outstanding, named as the outstanding public relations practitioner of the past century. He still shows up every day, goes to work in his office in New York. He's now 97 years old, and I like when I can to work some of his words into some of the work that I do. A couple of other things I should tell you, and I might touch on this a bit during my remarks. My goal is to not take up a whole bunch of time talking about this, speak for 20 minutes, maybe 25 minutes, and then we can have some time for questions and discussion and so forth and so on. But I think that I should point out that I've been conducting research on certain aspects of the internet and social media for more than 20 years. The study I'm going to talk about today is part of a project I've worked on over 13 years, a longitudinal study examining how social and other digital media were actually being used in public relations practice. Unfortunately, that study is coming to an end. We'd like to keep doing it year after year after year. But when we first started doing this research, we would harvest our sample names, send people an email, and invite them to click on this link that would take them to the online survey that they would fill out, we hoped, and send it back to us. And when we were first doing this stuff in 2005, 2006, 2007, people were all excited. Oh, wow, look at this, a link. I'm going to click on this and fill out the questionnaire. Now they look at we send them the email message, and they go like basically, oh, shucks, here's another one of those stupid web-based email surveys. So it's getting harder and harder to get people to participate in research of this nature. We've had a good run with it, but we're not going to be able to continue it. The other thing I want to make sure that people understand my definition of public relations. Not everything that happens in the public relations realm is really public relations. I mean, in law, we have a distinction between judges and attorneys and police officers and dog catchers and people who work in the security department at a Walmart store or something like that. Same thing in religious organizations. There'll be the high priests, and they'll work their way down to the altar boys and so forth and so on. In public relations, we seem to call everything, whether it's just publicity and press agentry, we put it all into one bucket and call it all public relations. Rarely do you hear somebody say, oh, I'm a press agent. They'll say they're a public relations person. Rarely would somebody say that she works as a publicist. They would claim to work in public relations. So for me, if it's going to be public relations, it's going to be something that's a management level position. It's going to be something that conducts research on the front end. Based on that research, there's strategic planning to decide what they're going to do in their messaging. Then there's the messaging and the communication stage. And after that, there's the evaluation stage. So I think it's kind of important to look at that through. Also, this survey, looking at how social media research measurement and evaluation is actually being used in the public relations industry, is it's not just an American problem or an American concept. That the importance of involving research and measurement and evaluation in public relations, been addressed by many people. You'll see them there. Walter Lippmann, going back to the 1920s. Edward Bernays, who taught in this building, lived to be about 105 years old. Long list. And it's not just an American problem. This research has been conducted, not the study that I'm going to talk about specifically, but research of this nature dealing with these topics have been conducted, and this is just a short list of you've got Great Britain there in Canada, Australia, Japan, Slovenia, Russia. Serum Issues work has been in a number of countries in Asia and South Africa. And then here's my slide telling you what I was saying, that it's not really public relations if there's no research on the front end. I mean, sometimes we'll have them laughing. It's kind of mean, a laugh, but we'll have students say, why do I have to take a research methods course if I want to be a public relations person? Well, because you need to know how to do research to function effectively. And that's just not something just for public relations. I'm sure my colleagues in the room and other areas of comm, and particularly advertising, would agree that research is a very important component of what we do. So let's move to the study itself. That the purpose was to examine how research measurement and evaluation actually are being used in contemporary public relations practice. For the method, it was a 10-year trend analysis. I've been conducting this research for over a 13-year period, but the part I'm talking about today was only doing during 10 years. When we started this, a woman named Michelle Hinson and I, she taught at the University of Florida, and we thought, well, come up with this great questionnaire in 2005, and we'll wind up being able to use the same questionnaire year after year after year. But of course, there have been many dramatic changes. And then all of a sudden, like, there were no changes. Because when we first started doing this work, Facebook was just getting off the ground in 2004, and there were other platforms that were much more popular than the ones that are popular today. But as I said, we used a web-based questionnaire. We had great cooperation with PRSA, the Public Relations Society of America. They sent out invitations for us to several thousand of their members. The sampling had to be judgmental or purposive. We would have liked PRSA to allow us to have selected a purely random sample, but they were sending it out. They weren't going to part with their membership list for obviously reasons. It's not because of this, it's not possible for us to statistically generalize the results, but we have a larger number of respondents than most people have. I mean, you are not going to find in the public relations scholarly literature too many research projects where the number of respondents was 4,586 over a 10-year period. And then here's the number of people who responded over the years, and you'll see that going up, we had 574 in 2009, and we're almost the same thing in 2010, and we were way up there in 2011, and then even higher in 2012. But then you can see a progression getting smaller and smaller and smaller. The 556 in 2017 was actually an anomaly in what had happened. When you do work of this nature with organizations like PRSA, you have to be available to them at their whim. And I got a phone call on my mobile phone about 12 noon on December 26th. The day after Christmas, and they said, "We're ready to go with this study if you are." And I'm like, "Thank you, Jesus, there really is a God," because the best time, seriously, with corporations and public relations and advertising people, the absolute best time to go into the field with research like this is the week between Christmas and New Year's, because nothing else happens that week, absolutely nothing. Banks don't even get robbed. The crime is down. I guess people are, you know, drinking beer and watching college football games or something on TV. But that led to that bump, that 556, because as you can see, in 2018, we were down to our lowest number ever. The demographics over the years, 27% from public relations firms, 14% from corporate communication departments, 15% from universities, to be non-teaching people. Public relations people working at universities, 19% in the nonprofit area, 9% from government, and rounding out the rest of that there. These demographics pretty much match PRSA's overall, which adds some strength to our sampling. The average age was 38. 68% female, 32% male, which also basically matches the given number. So we're very happy about when you measure the demographics against what exists in the total population. This tells us at least that as far as the demographics are concerned, we had a good sample. So let's take a look at the results. That fewer than half of the respondents represent organizations or clients that have conducted research, measurement, or evaluation, analyzing what members of various strategic publics have communicated about them via social or digital media. So, for a field that where research is really important, fewer than half are doing it in this area. When we ask people what kinds of measurement that they think should be taking place, we got strong support for content analysis measures, probably because that's a lot of the research that's going on is in the content analysis area. Simplistic output measures scored the lowest. A simplistic output measure would be like clicks, hits, did somebody open your website, so forth and so on. The impact of influentials and opinion leaders fell at midpoint along with the impact of attitudes, opinions, and behavior. We asked them what kinds of research is actually taking place. And we found that output measures were more likely to be conducted than content analysis. These would be the simple output measures I was just talking about. Basically, clicks, that sort of thing. And then also, the output measures are considerably more likely to be used than measures studying impact on opinion leaders and or attitudes, opinions, and behaviors. One of the things that we talk about here in our classes at BU and a variety of other settings, academic conferences and some of that stuff, is that measuring just the output would be like giving the award for somebody who wrote a good love letter without any concern for the fact, did the love letter lead to the date, did the couple continue to date, did they live happily ever after, and so forth and so on. So what we have here, unfortunately, is a situation where people are just giving the emphasis on the love letter itself rather than in how it was delivered, rather than in whether it was even opened and read and a variety of other things. So a few more things to look at in this regard, that there appear to be three major reasons why the social and digital media aren't being measured in a more comprehensive way. The first is budget, and the reality most organizations don't set aside sufficient research budgets to measure and evaluate effectively. It's a big frustration we have when somebody goes to the emergency room in a medical situation. Rarely do they say, "Oh, the X-rays would be too expensive. Let's not do that." We're just not budgeting enough money in the public relations field for the organizations to do that work. And then second is the lack of PR practitioners trained and skilled in the more comprehensive research and measurement areas. There's often a big push to hire people from throughout the liberal arts. Let's hire some historians, let's hire some English majors, let's hire some people who study political science history and have them work in public relations. But if they hire public relations people who like go to a school like BU, and it's not just us, there are other good schools as well that require a class in research, that some of this research could be done in-house by a staff person. And then the third thing up here is the reality that most of the companies that provide content analysis services are highly successful, make a lot of money, and the majority of their employees are not able to conduct research other than the more simplistic methods. Measuring attitude, opinion, and behavior formation or change is more complex and would require a bigger budget to take care of. So that's essentially the message that I wanted to share with you, and I'll be happy to go into a discussion phase.
Any questions? I have one.
Good.
In terms of the content analyses as opposed to some of those metrics like clicks.
Yeah.
So clicks, there's only, quite often we have certain associations of what that can mean.
Right.
Ideas of engagement or usability,
yep.
things like that. As someone that's external from PR, I was wondering if you could cue me in a little bit in terms of, are there any commonalities in terms of what we search for in a content analysis as a priority?
The main reason the content analysis is used a lot is because it's relatively easy to do, and you can charge a lot for it. It's really ridiculous to me how much money people can charge for research services, and so that's an issue that I think we'll get to in a bit. But the way engagement is measured, we might have some difficulty if somebody turned that methodology in on one of our in a BUCOM term paper. We probably have some methodological suggestions for them. So that's part of the. But in this industry, I mean, there used to be. It's a really nasty word in the industry, but they used to measure public relations by just if you had let's say there was a news story that appeared in the Boston Globe, and the news story was 8 inches long, then they would figure out how much it would cost to buy an advertising hole of that much money, and then they. If that wasn't bad enough, they would then take that amount of money and multiply it by 3 or 4 times, because they argued that public relations messages were more credible than ads were. And so for a long, long time, there's been a little bit of a debate going on between the academy and the practice in terms of the appropriateness of some of the methods that are being used. Michelle?
Thanks for sharing this research with us. I'm wondering if over the years, you said this is a longitudinal study,
yep.
Mm-hmm. Have you received any feedback from the practitioners over your findings?
That's a good question. We've presented this research every year at a conference called the International Public Relations Research Conference. It used to meet every year in Miami, and they moved to Orlando just because the cost of meeting in Miami is going off the charts. That's a conference that is attended by a number of practitioners in addition to the academics. And then the other area, a place where there's been each year we've taken the data and written a more comprehensive refereed publication that appeared in Public Relations Review a couple of times, appeared in Public Relations Journal a couple of times, and things like that. But we've also presented it at not every year at the PRSA National Conference, but certainly probably of the 10 years, probably 7 times. And we've never, I mean, I have some really good friends in the measurement industry, and I don't know how to describe my relationship with them on this. It's sort of something we just don't talk about. It's like having a next door neighbor who supports a different political party or has differing religious viewpoints than you. You just sort of don't go there. I've gone there in the things that I've written, and occasionally in speeches and stuff like that, and I've advocated that. I've been a pretty strong advocate for it. Most of my good friends in the, the people I respect the most in the public relations measurement industry, most of those people are they're people who are doing what I want them to do, as opposed to the kind of shysters. Shysters is probably too strong a word, but in a way, these people have made a lot of money doing content analysis stuff, measuring clicks, measuring engagement based on time spent on a web page. Well, you know, I mean, everybody knows this. Sometimes you open the web page and the phone rings. Or many of us do a lot of our work at home, and there are children or dogs or cats or somebody comes to the door, and you leave the... So you might have actually looked at the web page for 2 minutes, but you had it up there for 20, and they take the... So there's just so many methodological flaws in what's happening in that industry, but that industry makes a phenomenal profit. I do two kinds of consulting. One is situations where I do research surveys for companies. Another is where I plan professional development events, bring in speakers, have workshops and things like that. I have a hard time getting the client to agree to the fee on the professional development, which is at least half and sometimes a quarter what it costs to do the research. I've seen research projects where I've done the project and made a sizable amount of money, but the year before they paid that money plus an additional 50 or 60,000 to a research provider house to do the studies. So it's a touchy area. if as people hire graduates from programs like this, like ours, they're able to do some of those studies. You can pay for a job. If they do one study, I've seen people pay $75,000 for a survey. I've seen people pay $35,000 for five focus groups. That if you had somebody one of our graduates just conducting the focus groups, one of our graduates doing that, that would be $100,000. They'd pay the person $45,000 or $50,000, and the company could pocket the rest of it. But we're trying to get them to do that, but it's a very, very slow process. Good question. Anything else? Yes.
Yes. What other types of ways would you measure, like the same thing? Would you do an experiment?
The experimental research is done, but I haven't done the experimental research because I've been more interested in the actual messages that they're using. The trouble with experimental research is that the easiest way to do that is with students. So the students are the subjects. The second easiest way to do it is a group in the community that they would identify as basically upper middle income housewife. And what that is, it's basically women between the ages of 30 and 50 who are stay-at-home moms or who don't work because they're married to investment bankers or something, who are making more money than you can imagine. So it's difficult. I'm having a hard enough time getting 200 or 400 public relations people to give me 5 to 6 minutes to fill out a questionnaire. There's no way I'm going to get them to go to a focus group room. That's just not going to happen. So I wish we could do it, but you often can. You have to improvise a lot in this business. Anything else? Well, I hope you got something out of this, and thanks very much for coming. And thanks for having me.